Sorry, one second.
Oh.
I think we should vote Camden off.
Yeah. I think Camden's getting the votes tonight.
I don't care, I have an idol.
Yeah. All right, so
so hello.
Welcome to the Survivors Ready podcast. First episode, we're going to do some introductions to talk about ourselves and some of our favorite things from Survivor, like our favorite seasons and players. Who wants to start us off?
How about the hostess with the mostest?
Oh, fucking shit. What is up? My name is Pele. My favorite, or I guess we could also talk about like how long we've been watching Survivor.
Yeah, true.
That would kind of make sense. My first time watching Survivor was season 14, Survivor Fiji. But then I sort of dropped off, and I picked it back up right when 40 came out. That's when these guys got me back into it. And right around that was COVID times began. So I like binge watched all of what CBS had to offer pretty much. By the time that I'd moved out, I think I've seen every single season. Oh, my favorite season. Almost forgot that one. I haven't even thought about it. I guess I'll say...
You haven't thought about it in the whatever years you've been watching Survivor?
Yeah, it's just like because I've been watching so much Survivor recently, like I've been binging Australian Survivor right now, so my brain is on that right now.
I mean, it could change. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, it's. I feel like it's always changing.
Yeah, I think right now my favorite season is honestly Australian Survivor Champions vs. Contenders 2 Season 4. I'm going to say that much. I love that season. It's so good. Favorite player, David Gannat from Australian Survivor. Sorry, I'm an Australian Survivor guy now.
You've converted.
Yeah, you've
fully
converted.
It's so good.
To the Aussie side.
Yeah.
It's so good. I want to play that kind of more than US.
Are you allowed to apply to Australian Survivor if you're an American?
I think so.
I mean, I don't know what the rules are.
They're in season 6, Brains versus Brawn. There's a brain on there. Way. She lives in New York.
What about the rest of the person? Why just the brain?
Only her brain was allowed to make it over there. Only her brain got through the protocol.
I'm sorry.
I'm Camden.
These are the kind of jokes you can expect from us on this podcast.
I'm Camden. I only started watching Survivor on season 30. That was my first one. My dad had watched it from the beginning, like since 1, I think. And I just always heard stories about him watching it with his family and how like crazy it was. And I don't know why I never hopped on board until so late, because like that idea of like single elimination, like I love, and like when Total Drama Island was on, I was obsessed with that. And this is just like the real life version. So
yeah,
I don't know why
it
took me so long to start watching Survivor with him. But then I did at 30, and then I remember by the time Game Changers happened, I had watched like pretty much all the seasons, at least like a lot of important ones. There's still probably, I think, a few I'm missing out on, like early ones that I'm just like not that interested in. But my favorite season has switched a couple times, but I think for a long time now, I realized that my favorite was Second Chance in season 31. Because like I just love how committed, and like that's the first time that every person on there was a returner and someone who hadn't won. So like everyone is in it the same amount of motivation, and or everyone who is in it has the same amount of motivation and the same amount of drive. And I just feel like that made for a more exciting game. And I loved the premise that came out of it, which was that Survivor is just always changing, and you like adaptability is the best trait you need to have. It was a thing like way earlier in the season too, just adapting with like what your tribe wanted to do, or in the early seasons, I mean, adapt with what your tribe wants and being able to go with the flow, as well as trying to control it like by the sidelines. But I feel like season 31 was really big on old school versus new school, and it showed that like old school players just can't hack it anymore, and the adaptability, like, it went up from there, and then from then on the adaptability you needed was just so high. So I think back to 31 for that reason, and there's so many great players from that season that I feel like just like took the idea of a second chance so well. And even though only one of them won, I feel like so many of them upped their game so much, whereas like you usually just see like second time players just like have some sort of downfall, like JT or something, or Malcolm. But there's so many people that on that season just like they knew they wanted it so bad, so they tried so hard, and I think they did a much better job at making it like their second chance. And then my favorite player has always been Tony, and before, like, people make fun of me because now that's the obvious answer, I liked Tony before Winners at War, okay? I liked Tony even before Game Changers, so. But now him being, like, the two-time, or one of the two-time winners, I feel like now that's not a very unpopular opinion before, but you all don't know the amount of Reddit fights I've had with people about how amazing Tony was and how Kagayan was like, that was the most dominant game in Survivor. So that's my pick. Moving on.
All right. So I'm Connor.
Can I add a quick note about Tony?
You can.
I just showed my girlfriend Kagayan for the first time, and okay, the entire merge, she's like, man, I fucking hate this Tony guy. I can't stand him. I'm so annoyed. And I was like, so who do you think's gonna win? And then she was like, hopefully not Tony. And the entire time I'm sitting there like, you're not gonna like the finale, are you?
Well, that's something that I think we can touch on a little bit later here, is just the idea of watching Survivor as like a bigger fan. You have a different like idea of what the show is, and you understand it in a different way as opposed to first time viewers. Like when I watched it the first time, I'm probably sure I would have hated Tony too. When I first started watching like this and Big Brother and like the reality shows, I didn't look at it as like a game bot like that, like Tony, like someone who's like super strategic. I would probably not like them if I was just like, oh, this is for like challenges and you're just trying to be likable and whatnot. But now obviously my mindset has flipped on that somewhat. So I think that's something that we can touch on as well. But before we do that, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Connor. I started watching Survivor in season 33, and it wasn't really because anybody told me to. Somebody in like an offhanded comment said, oh, you should watch Big Brother. And for the longest time, I thought like these shows were, or I thought Big Brother was like more of like I knew it was a reality show, but I thought it was more so like Real Housewives or something like that. Some like stupid reality that like I didn't like, I was like, this is the same as the others. I don't see any merit to this. But then when I started watching it, because I started watching season 18 of that show, and I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. The idea of voting people out and then till you get to a final two or a final three, and then the people you voted out decide the winner. That's awesome. And then right after that season finished, season 33 of Survivor premiered, and I'm like, all right, let's watch this. This seems like somewhat similar. And then I loved that even more, and I got really into that. And I like the difference between Survivor and Big Brother is Big Brother is a more of an investment, because it's like all the cameras are on all the time. There's three episodes a week, so you're pretty much like you're consumed by it. But with Survivor, it's just like any other show. You get one episode a week. You get all the important moments, and I just think the game is better for it. I think the challenges are better. I think overall the strategy is better, and the format is a lot cooler too. But anyway, so I started watching at season 33, and then I don't think I watched any other season before Game Changers. I think I watched a couple, but going into Game Changers, I actually didn't know most of the returners, or at least I didn't watch most of their seasons. I knew like highlights from them. So it was cool. So even though it was all returner season, it was still kind of like a newbie season for me because I didn't understand a lot of the backstory. But between 33 and 35, I watched a lot. And that's when I really got on board. It consumed my life. I watched so many seasons. Even though most of the seasons, rewatching them, I knew the winners going into it, I still wanted to experience everything. Now, for favorite season, this has changed a lot over time. For a while, it was the original Blood vs. Water season. I really liked that season. I thought that had a really good combination of newbies and returners. Then Camden kind of got me on the wave of Second Chance. For all the reasons he mentioned, I think it's just a fantastic season, and a lot of the players on there are some of my favorite players. But I do think I fall into the category of saying that season 20, Heroes versus Villains, is my favorite season, because when it comes down to it, Survivor's all about the players, and the cast really makes or break a season. Regardless of what the theme is or all the twists and whatnot, the thing that makes a season as great as it is the people that's on it. And every cast, for the most part, has a couple duds that go far, and they're part of the story, but they don't do anything or they don't contribute. The thing that's so awesome about Survivor Heroes vs. Villains is I personally would say that the two players that were the biggest duds of the cast were the first two voted out. So it ended up being the
quote-unquote. That never happens.
Yeah, and that never happens. Now, that's some of the biggest complaints about these newer returner seasons, like Game Changers, where all of everybody's favorites get voted out right away, or Winners at War, all of everybody's favorites get voted out right away. So with Heroes vs. Villains, it was perfect. You get to still see all of it. And even still, some of my favorites still got voted out early, but it ended up making it to the point where the merge cast was still amazing, and I wasn't unhappy with any of it, really. But not only that, I think that season introduced tons of new amazing moves. Like, you can pretty much define each season by one big move, but I think Heroes vs. Villains has so many. And not only is it in the merge, but in the pre-merge. The pre-merge is maybe one of the best ever because it goes back and forth to even out the numbers of Heroes and Villains by the merge. You could see the power struggle with Russell and Boss and Rob. There's just so much to like, so many funny moments. A moment that I know me and Camden quote a lot is when James is talking about banana etiquette, and when he's talking to Colby, and he's like, if you don't want to stay here, I'll stay here because I like it here. Because the way he says that is so funny. But like, such a quotable season, such a fun season. And of course, the theme itself, I don't think that there's a better theme that's been done in the show. I think the idea of Second Chance is really cool. But Heroes versus Villains is at its core. Everybody has that on every season. There's always heroes and there's always villains. And what's going to rise to win the game in the end. And you can see with the season that being a villain is the way to win the game. Not the most likable way, but it is the way to win. Heroes end up making it all the way to the end and then getting cut because they are a hero. People know that if the hero does get to the end, they win. So being a villain is the way to win the game in most scenarios. So I love that. It's a whole like present raft with a bow on top of a season. And that's why I love it. Now for my favorite player, I love so many players, and it's been hard for me to really narrow down what my favorite player is. But I will say, as of late, I've been a huge champion of Michelle Fitzgerald. I love her game a lot. One, because she's an underestimated player, and I think underestimated players are super fun to watch. You do have like your overdogs and your overlords and your strategic masterminds and whatnot, and those are always fun to watch. But someone who's underestimated and can make it to the end, I love watching a good underdog story. And not only that, but she's also good in challenges. When you think about Michelle, you don't really think, oh, a good challenge, like a challenge beast, but she's very good at individual challenges. If she gets far into a season to the individual portion, she'll win a good amount of those. And on top of that, she, in her original season in Ko-Rong, she did a lot where she was able to socially maneuver even though like she was on the bottom and socially maneuver into circles. Same thing on 40. She was able to socially maneuver her way even though she was on the bottom. And I think above all, social maneuvering is my favorite part of the game. And I think people who can do that well, I appreciate the most. So I've been a huge champion of hers as of late, especially because of her like controversy of her winning in Ko-Rong and how everybody thought Aubrey should have won. I was on the side of her always, because since I started watching in 33, when I went back and watched it, so it was still fresh in people's minds, I definitely championed her there. And then in 40, when people said that she should have gotten second over Natalie, I also championed her there, because I just think that someone, she's the only Survivor player remaining up to this point that has made it to the end all of their times that they've played. So I think that's a stat that is very interesting. I think it's very commendable. So I'll always champion her because I think she, just like her character in the show, I think she'll always be underestimated.
Hell yeah.
I do like that. I feel like with the idea of heroes versus villains, you know, I feel like the best seasons of Survivor have some sort of lesson about the game of Survivor to it. Like how I think, or in that season, it was cool because we kind of knew, like, heroes versus villains, like, the villains win Survivor, but that had to be put to the test. And Second Chance was all about, like, adaptability, and, like, Cook Islands had the lesson of, like, Yul versus Ozzy, like, and I think the community is pretty, like, set on the idea that, like, Yul is definitely better than Ozzy, but, you know, in that season, it was so neck and neck, and it was a 5-4 vote. I feel like the best seasons introduce some sort of test and like lesson to the game of Survivor. That one, like now that that has happened, the adaptability needs to be amped for anyone else that plays after this season, because now you like there's this unspoken rule that is kind of set into place now that like it is more likely for blank. So now you kind of have to adapt to that.
Yeah, the way I kind of see it is like a bar is being raised slowly but surely every single season, because you can't really step backwards after the strategy. The more and more people that play the game, the higher the strategy level goes, essentially. Yeah. We've never really seen any season in particular really dip off or go super far down. Like there might not be the best players on a certain season, but it always is elevated.
I do think that with New Wave Survivor, like postseason 30, I would say, which is where I guess you would say New Wave started, especially with Second Chance in 31. Everybody on the season, for the most part, is, oh, I need to make a move, or I need to do this, that, or the other strategically. Now, that is the mindset now, because everyone's like, oh, you need to make a move to win the game. But everybody's so hyper-focused on doing that that it ends up screwing them over now. There was always a balance of most people weren't doing that, and then the people, the small amount of people that made a move ended up winning at the end. Now it's transferred that everybody's trying to make a move, and the people that are making it to the end are the people who are doing it at the right time. So it's gone from you have to make a move to you need to know how to make it and at the right time. So if anything, it's gotten a lot harder. And I think that's why it's been hard for older players to adapt when they come back to a new season, because timing is now super important. It never used to be about that. It used to be just you assume your control and then you have it. Now you need to assume control at the right time and maintain it. So that's super interesting to look for now in current seasons.
Yeah, I feel like Survivor's just gotten harder and harder like every year. And I think all three of us are kind of fans and champions of the later seasons, because I feel like the community's kind of split, but I feel like I see more of people like, oh, we miss old Survivor, you know, like why, like have a, like, we need to bring back like an old school season or whatever. And I just don't think so. I just think everything, almost everything that Survivor has ever brought to us has been like has just added some sort of strategy for the players to have. Like even in this newest season where, you know, wasn't a big fan of it, of like the the whole you need to call out some phrase and then someone will know, like the idols. I mean, that's what I was
the shared
to
idol, but, the throwaway.
Yeah, shared idol. Yeah. There's three of them. All three people from the different tribes need to call out that weird phrase. That just kind of makes it that way, like everyone knows who has the idols now. But even still, even if they bring in like some sort of rule that like people don't really like, they, like the players, like going back to what you said, Connor, because like the players are what make the game. The players somehow still created some crazy outcome from all that. And so I think that the newer Survivor gets, the more intricate it gets and the more intimate it gets and the higher the playing levels and strategies. And so I just think it maybe not like always gets better and better. Like there's certainly seasons that, you know, I consider the best, or like 31's my favorite. It's not like every single season gets better and better, but I feel like the eras only get better.
Yeah. You're right with the players. What they do with what they're given is kind of what shapes the idea. With this previous season, 41, it was like, oh, everybody knows where the idols are. It's not a hidden immunity idol if everybody knows. And then Liana got the.
I need to put a sweatshirt on.
And then Liana got the super overpowered advantage where she just gets to steal it. Is like as long as she knows it, like the knowledge is power. Yeah, knowledge is power, but everybody knows it. So I don't. It seemed like a bit too much for me. However,
imagine how much cooler that would have been if she just kept that under wraps.
I hated that idea that they introduced an advantage where you have to know something for it to work, but yet everybody knows it, so it doesn't seem like much of a challenge to actually get it in play. So that
they
was
probably should have
for
separated
me.
That out if they
but,
would have, yeah.
Yeah, but what ended up happening was people used everything that they knew, and Xander was able to use that to his advantage, and it ended up not being as horrible as it could have been. It ended up being a pretty cool moment. But that's not on the advantage itself, where I don't know. I think Survivor or the people who work on the show might pride themselves on thinking, oh, this was cool because this moment happened. I think more onus needs to be put on the players making it happen. A lot of the times, like, for example, in season 40, when Tony got the extortion advantage, if he wasn't able to do what all the magic he pulled, it probably would have ended up, like, looking dumb. It's like, wow, that was really dumb. He didn't even do anything wrong, and he just got screwed over from the edge. But
he was the perfect person to get it, too. I don't think anyone else could have done what he did.
Exactly. Tony was able to use his, for some reason, his maybe the most, like, social, charismatic person on the show, who was able to convince people not in his alliance, people in his faux alliance, to all give him what he needed, which is incredible. It's crazy to me. I always think back on this one thing that Spencer said I don't know if it was on an interview or whatnot, but he was saying, like, yeah, genuinely, like, Tony's just such a good person and relatable, and everybody loves him, even though he's crazy. Like, people still enjoy him. They don't hate him. It's just he's crazy and he's unpredictable. So I guess, like, it just works, and he's just got some sort of charm that is very, very rare to have on the game of Survivor.
And it's going to help you exponentially. I mean, the guy's won twice. Like,
yeah,
having
I
that
guess he just is the most charismatic person to ever here, because, like, everyone's watching that season being like, how can you not see Tony's winning right now? And everyone is either like, I don't see that, or they're like, I just don't really care.
Yeah, because when Natalie comes back into the game at the end, and she's like, everybody thinks Tony's running it. And then the rest of the people in the game, like Ben and Denise, are just like, what? They're stupid. It's just like, okay, first of all, a couple things wrong with that. One, listen to what the jury's saying, of course. That's just Survivor 101. But two,
even if they're wrong, like, they're voting, so
yeah,
it doesn't
it's
matter.
What they think. You have to convince them why you need to be the one that earns
perception is 90% reality, except in this case, the jury's perception is the only thing that matters, so.
Yeah.
So
in most cases, it's right. So
yeah.
I want to say, for the most part, jury's perceptions are correct. There's been a few instances where I would argue it, but
I think most of the time, like, it, because I always thought, like, there's no way they could understand the game so well, because, like, they're not in it, you know. They they see a tribal and they think they know everything. But I guess with, like, each player getting out one by one, I'm sure they go over exactly, like, what happened in those past, like, 2 days, where really right before they gotten out and stuff. And also, I just feel like that those small things sometimes just don't matter. Kind of like the show doesn't show everything. I think it shows what matters. And I've hardly ever felt like, oh, they didn't show enough. I didn't really understand that. So why did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that the show kind of only portrays what they need to get the message across. And I think they do a great job of it, honestly.
Yes, like, because sometimes they do, instead of a why this person won edit, a why this person lost edit. And I think that's less of a satisfying one, but it still is the story that's being told. So I'm still okay with it. But either way, I think, to your point, it's all them comparing notes when they get voted out. But it's really, even like, quote unquote, under the radar players, they know who's under the radar. So even if you're not the flashy player, they'll still know by the end that you were that was the game that you were playing. And I also think, unsimilarly to Big Brother, I feel like when it comes to the end, people know who they're voting for when they go in. But that the final tribal, I think, actually does have a huge impact. That speech that you give, the game that you can portray, I think legitimately sways people's votes. I can't be 100% certain on that, but I can only assume so with how open people seem to be on it. For the most part, I think some people come in with a locked mindset, but for fans of the game and people who actually respect good gameplay, I think a lot of people come in with an open mind. So that's always important when you have that final tribal. And if you botch it, you only have yourself to blame. If you present everything that you've done and put it all on the table, then you can't be upset with losing the game after that. You've done everything you can, and then you know it's not on you. You said what you've done and why you should win. So I think it's all there for you to do, and I don't think that there's anything necessarily broken with the system at all, and that's why I think the game is so great. No matter how much they change it or how much they add, the core philosophy is still there, and I love that that's stayed true the whole time. The main idea of having a group of people, voting them out, and having those people that you vote out decide if you should win is so amazing, and you have one shot at it. You have one shot, and I love when people give their all.
And there's so many. No, you go ahead. My bad.
I was gonna kind of shift it to like, what do you guys think is the most bitter jury that we've ever seen?
I mean, I guess it has to be an early one. I can't think.
Yeah, it's gonna be early
head,
one.
But like, because like early in the Survivor's career. Like you didn't have to hear anyone out because like everyone would just give a speech. A lot of people, the point was to ask questions, but a lot of people just gave up and was like, you should not win because it has to be like something early, especially because like nowadays I feel like Fifis don't get nearly as hurt and like people understand it's a game way more than they did back then.
People respect gameplay more so now than they did in the past. A lot of winners from Really Survivor are, for the most part, the likable person at the end. Or did they maintain good relationships? Did they burn you? That was a huge consideration for people. I think a huge bitter jury is Survivor All-Stars. I honestly think that the people that voted against Boston Rob were, for the most part, extremely bitter. I think...
Yeah, that's honestly the answer, I think.
Because yeah. I think... When you look at that final tribal, they came in there guns a-blazing at Rob. He didn't even really stand a chance. So
even at the reunion, they're still
heated. They still get fucking pissed.
And what's so crazy about it is it was a 4-3 vote, so it was close either way. But when you look at like someone like Lex, he was so mad at him. But yet in the same exact season, he burned his actual friend from his previous season, Ethan, and he's like, it's just business. I have to vote you out. And he does it, like, no mercy. And then when Rob does it to him, somehow that's a real betrayal. Somehow that's the real – that was way worse.
What I did for you was a special friend favor.
Yeah, that one of the best quotes of all time. He's like, I came to you for a special friend favor. I want a special friend favor. That's hilarious. I need it like when your parents, you get like your parents like coupons like for a free hug or something like that. Here, you get a special friend favor.
That one is like weirdly so bitter because the order of events is that like Rob asks Lex, hey, can you save Amber? And then I'll try and save you. He did it in a much cooler way than what I just said. But they go back to camp and Lex and everyone else are like, they're like, man, if we vote out Amber, Rob and his gang are going to be mad. So I feel like it's our best chance. We're going to go to the merge. Low in numbers anyway, so let's just keep Amber around and hopefully that works out. it's so dumb because, like, he knows that it's just a maybe, and then, like, it doesn't even seem like he was acting like it was so bad to try and get Rob to change his mind, because in the reunion he's still super petty and upset. So I think he was like, he's actually mad and like actually thought that like Rob betrayed him when like Rob said like Lex knew that like this wasn't a for sure thing, like this is just our best chance, I think.
Yeah, it's so crazy that that was like such like a big stab in the back for him. I mean it was a betrayal to a certain degree, but the reaction I think was a little unwarranted. Big Tom was also super mad at him too.
Oh, yeah.
Don't be stupid.
To get to five, too. Like,
yeah.
I think a good second place bitter jury would be Samoa.
I would say purely
against Russell Hance, but it because there was a three, they didn't have to focus in on him so much.
I think
they also had the other guy to comment about.
I think their anger was valid, a lot more valid.
No, yeah, for sure.
Russell than it was against
Rob.
Yeah, it was definitely more warranted. I've gone back and forth on this, which jury I think was more valid for being mad at Russell, the Heroes versus Villains jury or the Samoa jury. I would think, considering that there's like legitimate contenders that I think are deserving winners against Russell and Heroes versus Villains, I think they're more valid for not voting for him based off of him being like kind of an asshole. So I understand that. But in Samoa, it's just like the other two I don't think are deserving of winning. So even though he was a villain and he was a bad person or whatever the issue was for each individual person, he's still far and away the most deserving of those three. So that's why I would consider that more of a bitterness thing. Whereas for Heroes versus Villains, you can easily justify why you wouldn't vote for him against for either Parvati or Santra. So I think
that one is hard because I feel like in Heroes versus Villains, it's like they're returning players. They should have known better than to be bitter. And even though they very much were. So I guess that's actually a point for them being more bitter than the Samoan people.
You would think
the Samoan people, like, they're all from Samoa.
Yeah, they're all Samoan people. But hey. you would think that, but if you think about it, a lot of those players were early season players, so they still have that same mindset. So I don't know. It's tough to think about. It's crazy because Russell was just so before his time. He's such a new wave player in the old school era. If he was in any other season.
I mean, before him, nobody was searching for idols. They waited until they got the clue to find the idol.
Yeah, nobody found idols without a clue before him. He was just so
crazy.
Yeah.
He would just find it in front of people. Like the one in the tree, he was just like, there's just a crowd of people, and he was just like, okay, I'll just take this.
Yeah, which is crazy. I do love him as a player. I do think that it's hard to say not ever playing the game that you'd be like, oh, I would always vote for game over that or whatever. But I don't know. I think it would be so interesting to play with him or alongside him and just see him do all these antics. I would be in awe, honestly. I would be more so just shocked at all the crazy stuff that he did more so than be mad about it. Because that's the best part of the game is all the crazy stuff that happens, all those shock value moments. That's what you're looking for. And he provides that. So
what's
that's
crazy
he can't
is
be
the
on
next
his side anymore, though.
The next two times we see evidence that he plays again in Redemption Island, real bad.
Yeah,
real
that's
bad blowout.
You can't be on his side anymore because on his side are just getting lower and lower every season.
Honestly, this is something that I think about when for a while there, whenever you had returning players on a season with newbies. Like the captain season specifically, when there's only a couple, early on, people decided to work with them. They're like, oh, let's work with Coach, let's work with Ozzy, let's work with Rob. I think that's a valid strategy. Is if the two options are to vote them out early or to ride with them and use their expertise and like develop a strong relationship with them, it seems like that's the smarter strategy than to get them out right away.
100%.
In my opinion. I feel like that's the right way to go. You can don't obviously be blind to it and just let them win, but like work with them. They know what they're doing. I would value that in the early game and then branch off and do your own thing later on.
You take advantage of that and keep them up until the merge, and then once the merge happens, sell them to the, as long as you have the numbers, take them out.
Yeah, I feel like people, the only evidence we've seen of it is people cut that person right away, or they stick with them and ride with them to the end. They don't mm-hmm. realize that with that extra level of expertise or that extra kind of legacy overhanging them, that they won't have that edge. Like, because regardless, like that legacy will give you the edge at the end for the most part.
Because I think the best way in terms of strategy to get further in the game is eliminating those threats as soon as you can at the merge. In my mind, I would think, hey, more times than not, if it's a captain season, the vast majority of us can build a bond together, or like build separate bonds on our own while we have two or three easy votes of taking out these captains. Because then that'll get us further, and maybe only one of them will be on the jury, but that's still fine. Like, I would much rather do that than, yeah. It's hard to explain that as like an easy sort of strategy at the merge, but again, none of us have played.
But just like the shield strategy, and it's always hard knowing when to get rid of your shield. And I guess unless you're not like the biggest, strongest person after that person goes, then maybe you don't have to worry about it. But those people that do, I feel like, that are always looking for that shield, they rarely ever get it right. I feel like Tony and Jeremy are the only ones to ever really get that right. But even Jeremy, like in Second Chance, I feel like by the end, no one was thinking of like shields that much. I feel like that was something he brought up kind of early on. And then by the end, no one was really talking about shields anymore, which I think is also such a great thing about Second Chance, is that like final seven or so people, I feel like all of them had a legit shot. And like, I feel like you don't really see that anymore. And there's always, you know, like the GOAT, but which GOAT was a thing before like greatest of all time in Survivor terms, though.
Yeah.
but like no one really, like, even the GOATs of that season were, I guess, like Kimmy and Keith, but like they were still likable people, and like Kimmy was way back when, so everyone was like, or yeah. I feel like you could have had that old time person legacy.
Do we want to explain what a GOAT is?
He would definitely get votes either season he was on.
Do we want to explain what a GOAT is to anybody maybe watching this that doesn't know?
Yeah. It's just someone that you think you can easily beat in the end when it comes down to like they vote for the winner. So a GOAT is just someone that you would bring along with you to the end, because you don't want to be up against the best players when you're at the end and people are voting for who they want to win. So a GOAT is just someone that you bring along to try and be that person with you. So that way you get all the votes, not them.
Yeah. And a GOAT would be either someone that didn't really do much in the eyes of the jury, or that they don't respect, something like that. Someone who just for justifiable reasons will get little to no votes.
It's sad because I guess Cass would be considered a GOAT in Cagayan, but like she played a great game, but the jury hated her so much. That
no shot was she getting any votes.
Yeah, she would not have gotten any votes, which is why that's probably like that might be the stupidest decision in Survivor history. I feel like people talk about Eric giving up immunity or the JT thing. Both of those were strategy reasons. You know, they were like, this probably might not work out, but I'm gonna try it anyway. I feel like I have nothing else I can do. Whereas Wu had all the power in the world mm-hmm. to win it right there, to go up against Cass instead of Tony, but he picked to go with Tony instead. So I feel like that's the stupidest, just because like the win was in his grasp and he got rid of him. And yeah, like the other two people, like the wind wasn't in their grasp, but they were on the bottom pulling for straws, and the stupid straw happened to fall.
What's even funnier is that I just rewatched Kageyan, and the night after, who went at four? Spencer.
Yeah, Spencer.
When Spencer goes at four, and it's the three of them there, they then it clicks in their head, this is the final two. So we have to figure out who we're taking to the final two. Wu and Cass are in their the sleeping area, and they're talking to each other saying, yeah, no, it would be so stupid to take Tony. Like, he literally says the words, Cass, I would be the stupidest player in the world to take Tony to the final two. He literally says that verbatim.
And what's crazy, for the longest time, before season 40, I was always just like, you know what? Tony's a great player and all. I think he got really lucky with who he was with. Wu had some blind loyalty to him for whatever reason. Trish was like his like shield in terms of anything he said. She was able to just like talk people off of ledges for it. And I was like, that helped him a lot. I think that's a huge reason for him being able to get as far as he did and to win. But, you know, watching what he did in 40 against winners, all winners, and he was able to convince people to do some of the same stuff, one can only be led to believe that it was him who convinced Wu that that was – he got into Wu's mind and actually convinced him that that was the better shot for him to win, which is honestly a testament to how great of a player he is. Because I – it just – like my respect obviously went up with him winning again. But it made me reevaluate his first win and really see that I think that's what he did the first time. And it just shielded by it seems like other things fell his way. But I think he controlled a lot more than I was originally led to believe, which is amazing.
And part of his genius was that he incepted people. He put the ideas in their head without ever having to say them. And a little credit to Wu. I do think in those scenarios, you say whatever that person who you're talking to wants to hear.
True.
So
true.
I do think he did to like say the words like I would be the stupidest person to take him. I think he did believe that a little bit, but I do think a part of it was just like him catering to her. But the genius in Tony is that he plants those ideas in people's heads. And he planted the idea in Wu's head of like, oh, you're such this honorable man, huh? Well, what's that gonna do in if you like take me out right at the end? But also with the LJ vote, because I forget if he was either talking to LJ or talking to Wu and trying to get them to say, oh, I wanna take that person out. I'm pretty sure what happened was he was talking to LJ and saying like, or just like talking about Wu and stuff, but never saying anything in cement, never writing anything down. He just waited for LJ to say, yeah, I guess we should maybe take him out. And then I think it was LJ that he was talking to saying like and then LJ saying like, yeah, I guess we should take Wu out.
Yeah.
It was either that or the other way around. But either way, it was that Tony got that person to say, okay, fine, I guess, yeah, we should take that person out. And, like, not only can he go to other people and make it sound like it was their idea, those people also thought that, like, it was their idea that they came up with, not Tony planting it in their heads.
Yeah, which is crazy. That's just so mind-boggling that worked out. And another thing that I think he's really good at, if we're just gonna rant about how amazing Tony is here.
We're just sucking.
He's gotta be the best player at turning on allies and having them respect him for it. He does that so much. I feel like in most cases, people get like, oh my god, you turned on me for what reason or whatever. It seems like for the most part, like the entire season of Kageyan is him. Enemy, ally, like back and forth, just voting everybody off, like backstabbing everybody.
And also most people who vote their friends out do have a pretty good reason. Tony kind of created those reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
It did not need to happen.
It's crazy.
And he did it, and they all respected him for it. I do not remember if Jeremy voted for Natalie or if he voted for Tony in Winners at War.
I think he voted Nat.
I would imagine he did.
I think Tyson and Parvati did. I forget who else.
Yeah, I forget. But either way, I remember he was the only person on Winners at War that I remember even being like the slightest bit like upset that Tony voted him out. That's the only person I remember when I was watching like vote out stuff.
Jeremy He's voted the Natalie. Smartest.
Who did Jeremy? Who else voted Natalie?
Natalie was voted by. Rob? Ethan.
No.
Ethan, Parvati, and Tyson. Which is also so weird that actually maybe that's not weird that old heads voted for the wrong person.
They were with
her. They voted for the edge winner.
And they were with her, yeah. But
they were with her for a while though, yeah.
But more new school people voted for Tony because they understand that like that's the right answer. I'm just mad that all these winners didn't understand how correct of an answer Tony was over Natalie.
Yeah. But either way, he did the same thing in Winners at War. When he voted Sophie out and Sarah was mad at him, somehow he's able to turn it back and she was back on his side. I don't understand how he does it. He does it so much where he somewhat turns on an ally or someone who is perceived an ally to him and they thank him for it at the end of the game. I don't get it. It's awesome.
You've opened my eyes, dude.
You're right. I should have been voted out.
Imagine how differently that end game would have played out if Sarah had split away from Tony at that Sophie vote. Because when Sophie goes up, that would have been crazy.
Yeah, more
she
so,
had
I guess
Ben
more
and
stuff
Denise in
happened.
Her pocket.
Yeah. I don't know if... Actually, I guess it was more of a Sarah thing. Yeah, they did like Sarah more than they liked Tony.
Yeah, because Ben wanted to take Tony out at what? The four? No. No, because
well,
he
you
went
can't
out
at four.
I know Sarah was of the belief that if it was her and Tony in the end that she would win it. And yeah. I don't know. That's what I really wanted to happen was them to make it to the end and then see who the jury perceived as it. Because I think that would have been a good split vote there.
I know you're a Michelle fan, but imagine the final three being Nat, Sarah, and Tony.
Well, I think Michelle, Sarah, Tony would be the stronger fight. The thing, Natalie is just gets knocked down so much just because she wasn't in the game. If she had just come back at the merge, that's my problem with the edge is that it just goes on too long. If it ends right at the merge, I'm cool with that because like part of Survivor is like who cares if you were in stuff before the merge, like no one cares about that. But if you like start the game at the merge, you can find a way to win.
That's when you're playing the big moves to get yourself the resume to get the $1 million.
Yeah, not too many people care about your resume before the merge. So I'm fine with the edge being like we do it till the merge and that's it. But then they go back. Or maybe even if they all the people who lost at the merge challenge where someone goes back in. Yeah, they all go home, and then I guess if you want to start the edge again, then people who get voted out, you go back in. I still would not like that. I still would just like it to end at the merge and that be that.
It's just like one of those things where it's like they did it for money reasons. Like the like none of these players would have came back if they weren't on the season the whole time. But honestly, even if they stopped at the merge, I still feel like that would have been a ton of screen time for what the 8-ish people that are on pre-merge. I feel like that they would have had a ton of content because that's like half the episode split for them, especially the people that are there at the beginning are getting all that edge content. So, I mean, either way, I feel like that would have worked for everybody. It would have worked game-wise, and it would have worked money-wise. It would have worked incentive-wise. So I think that's the clear answer. But the thing that sucks about it the most is the people that get voted off early on are benefited for being voted out early on because they get the chance to get more advantages to help themselves get back in the game,
exactly.
Which doesn't make any sense. Like players like Nick, who got voted out right before that return challenge, had no shot of winning. He had no shot of winning because he had no way to advance himself in the challenge, which is ridiculous. So he's not benefited for being in the game longer and playing the game better. That makes no sense. But, you know.
Yep. I do feel like Nick kind of got screwed because even in the edit, Nick just didn't look strong at all.
Well,
I remember
somebody,
Tony.
I mean, somebody has to take the fall.
Yeah.
So
Tony commented on it. I forget what podcast it was, I think. But he was very open about like, no, man, Nick was my woo. Nick was my right hand, and they made Woo look great in 28. So how is Nick now going to look like he did nothing? Like I just dragged him to the end, because that clear, like from his perspective, that wasn't what happened at all.
Yeah, I remember him saying that, being like, I think the edit was like the poor judgment in that was that they made it seem like, oh, if anyone has a chance to go against Tony, it's going to be Nick. And then he didn't. And then that made it look, that made him look so stupid. But like the other people were more stupid for like never going against him. You know, that was like the, or they were less stupid because they were on his side or whatever. You know, Nick was gonna vote him out, and then he didn't. So that's dumb. But I don't think that ever happened in real life. I think, like Tony said, he was like, Nick was my right-hand guy. It seemed like Nick was close to as important as Sarah in that season.
But Sarah's the better storyline for the edit, so it makes sense. Like, I get it.
And the edit, they had to make someone, like, was like, well, they're going to... If someone's going to pull over and go against Tony, it's going to be Nick. And in real life, it was like, that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
I got to say, if the Edge content wasn't in the merge, we would have definitely seen that build, that bond be like more built, like, because they would have had more time to show the Tony and Nick, like essentially the trio that Tony builds without telling the other two that they're in a trio. Because as long as none of them say each other's name, the three of them could have gone real far, in my opinion.
Yeah. And another thing for Winners at War, to champion Michelle a little bit, I've loved these under the radar games, or these games where the player is on the bottom but gets themselves out of it. Michelle was like that in her own season that she won. She did it to a more successful rate, obviously, because she won, but she pretty much did it again. Obviously, she got helped out from Natalie coming back, so she was able to pair with her. And then she won some key challenges. Like, she did it through her own like prowess. Like, she was able to win challenges and get herself back into a winning position. But unfortunately, if you have a player like Tony, it's obviously going to overshadow it. I know that a lot of the people on the Edge were going to try and get the votes to make Michelle get second place over Natalie, because they didn't want Natalie to get second. And that would have been cool. But overall, I'm glad Tony needed to win, so I'm glad that they made sure that that happened. But like, same thing with Xander in this last season. I know it seems like that the cast has come out and said that they like let him skate by and stuff, but if you're on the bottom and you have been able to take a target off your back for being at the bottom, through doing stuff on your own, I think that's awesome. And I think that's hugely socially inclined. And I think it's way easier to, when you have people on your side, get a target off your back, as opposed to being on the bottom by yourself. So I've always loved those stories of people that can go far with that.
Do we want to do a 41 review at some point?
Yeah, I guess we should at some point.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to do it now?
Or you meant like a whole episode?
Yeah, or a whole episode.
Well, yeah, no, like a whole like deep dive episode. We move not like yeah. Not week.
Yeah, at
by
some
week,
point, but yeah. It's been 54 minutes. Yeah. So.
I mean, this is what happens with us with Survivor, and we get on to talk about it, and this is kind of, I feel like, how these podcasts are going to go. We're just going to kind of just go off the cuff.
Pretty much just shoot the shit.
Yeah, we'll have some better, more organized topics and segments where we can kind of be more controlled on what we're talking about. But in general, this is kind of what it's going to be. We're just going to talk about Survivor. I love talking about Survivor. I could literally talk about it forever. So, that's going to be this podcast.
Hell yeah. If you guys don't know, follow Survivor's Ready on TikTok. I believe on TikTok it is on Survivor_Survivors_Ready.
Probably just link it.
Yeah, I could. I don't know why I'm pulling it up. So, TikTok, Instagram,
like, we're waiting.
Twitter.
Like, yeah, tell me the name.
they're all down in the description, or the description of the episode on whatever podcasting app you're listening to this on. And yeah. Anything else you guys want to? No.
I think we covered it. I think this is a good intro episode. I'm glad to we covered. Excited. Yeah, we talked about a lot. So
covered some stuff, but it really also, doesn't even scratch the surface.
I didn't even bring up. We're on YouTube. Yeah, subscribe to us on YouTube. Also linked. And if you're already on YouTube, thank you.
Big thanks.
Big thanks.
I don't know who would be, but
it could happen. Or it could happen retroactively, which is cool.
Maybe Kelly Wentworth.
Yeah, maybe Kelly Wentworth will get back on our TikTok account.
Yeah.
Kelly Wentworth, come on the podcast. That'd be cool.
Yeah. One of our favorites, so.
One of our favorites.
Yeah.
All three of us. Because we all love that season. I didn't mention how much I like that season, but I do.
Oh, it's a great season. I just watched a video of her, all her confessionals on Edge of Extinction. She's great on that too.
Yeah, she's a bright spot in that season.
Probably the best. Yeah. Probably the her or Devin's probably the best.
Yeah, the brightest of spots.
I think she's the bright spot. Yeah, of that season, I would say. All right. Well, thanks for listening, watching, doing whatever, and bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.